Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are delighted to have Will Schwalbe with us this hour of the program, author of the End of Your Life Book Club. Will and his mom read dozens of books during the period of time after she was diagnosed with cancer and before she died. The two of them had always been avid readers. As a matter of fact, Will was in the book publishing field for some 21 years, and his mom had been reading all of her life and had read to Will when he was a very young child. So their tastes are sophisticated, and their tastes are for simple books, and their tastes are for books that are meaningful. And this book has become a bestseller and is just a lovely book, partially because the two of them are really good people. His mom was an extraordinary woman. She was the founding director of the Women's Commission for Refugee Women and Children, director of admissions at Harvard when he was growing up. She traveled the world extensively, and so they had this life experience, and books gave them a chance to talk about some topics that perhaps would have been difficult to talk about if they had not been reading these books. So we're talking with Will this hour of the program. And here's how you reach us. I'm sure many of you have had a chance to read his book already. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, we would love to hear from you, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Hi, Will. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, a great pleasure. I really enjoyed the book, and I really enjoyed your mom and you. I must say, it was just a tender and interesting and inspirational book. She was quite a woman. You know, she often told you, you know, quit your job, you don't have to do this, or we can only do so much. But holy Toledo, did she do a lot in her lifetime.
She did do a lot, but she just loved it. And she was representative in some ways, I think, of just so many people that we know in our lives and communities who are so involved. And they're involved in local hospitals and schools and arts organizations and things they care about. And they're very often kind of unsung heroes. They do it out of love, out of joy, but not out of a particular ambition.
Mm-hmm. It's obvious that books were a huge part of your life, considering what you've done with your life and your mom's life from your very earliest memories.
Oh, yeah. Books have always been. I mean, I was that kid who had my nose buried in the book at the table, who long after lights out had the flashlight and was reading the book under the covers. One of the wonderful things that Mom taught me is Mom would just never say to us, why don't you put down that book and do something? Because for Mom, reading was doing something really, really huge.
Mm-hmm. And for your dad, too, you have memories of the two of them sitting in the living room on weekends. And what were they doing? They were reading books.
They were reading books. And after dinner, they were reading books. And they really, books were not escape for them. Books were how they knew what they needed to do in the world. It's how they learned about new things. Books were living. I mean, they had books in their hands all the time. And my dad, who fortunately is still with us, still, you know, if you see him, there's a pretty good shot he's got a book in his hand.
And are you talking with him about the books that he's reading and you're reading now?
Yes. I mean, we always had one of the things why I sort of jokingly started referring to it as a book club as I was sitting there with Mom while she was undergoing chemo and we had hours and hours to talk is that all of us have always talked about books all our lives. And we're all very likely to say to each other in a pause in conversation, what are you reading? I mean, that's our sort of standard question is, what are you reading? It's a question we also ask of everybody we meet every day. It's a wonderful question.
It is a wonderful question. One of the books that you mentioned early on, which is an important book, and it's a book that I love your description of it. It probably had an incredible number of frequent flyer miles because you took it everywhere and you never got to it, is Crossing to Safety, Wallace Stegner. Tell me about the importance of that book, what you thought when you finally read it, what it meant to your mom, and the conversation that it opened.
Yeah, Wallace Stegner's Crossing to Safety was a book. When I was in the book publishing business, I would ask bookseller after bookseller, what is your favorite book? And they would always you know, not always say, but so many of them would say Crossing to Safety that I knew this was a book that I should read. And actually, very often to booksellers, I would say, just because it was easier, oh, yeah, I read that. I'm nuts about that book. I love that. Crossing to Safety, great. But I actually hadn't read it and didn't know much about it. But when Mom said she had just read this wonderful, wonderful book, Crossing to Safety by Wallace Stegner, I was not about to fib to my mother. So I went home. I read it that weekend. And I describe it as one of those don't talk to me, I'm reading books. Mm. You know, a book that you start, and if anybody dares says, you know, will you put your coffee mug in the sink? You sort of bark at them because you're so into that book. And in some ways, it was the book that launched Mom and my book club. It was when we realized that we really were going to do this. We were going to read things at the same time and talk about them. And it was also very important because it showed us the way that books can help you talk about things that are too tough to talk about. And I'm not giving anything away when I tell you that there is a character at the start of the book, and you know she's dying of cancer, and her husband's name is Larry. Her name's Charity. And after we read the book, Mom was able to turn to me, and we were able to talk about whether Larry would be okay after Charity died. And, of course, we weren't talking about Charity, and we weren't talking about Larry. We were talking about Mom and Dad. And through talking about Larry and Charity, we were able to discuss really the most painful topic imaginable, which is how would Dad do after the death of his wife of almost 50 years.
Right. Your mom seemed to be the kind of person who could have had that conversation with you at many times in both of your lives. Your mom seemed to have a pretty good feel for the cycle of life.
She did. She had a very deep faith. I mean, one of the things that I discuss in the book is I describe myself as almost too lazy to be an agnostic, which is I really don't think about it very much at all. And my mother was a devout Christian. She was an elder of the Presbyterian Church, and she was very comfortable engaging on big issues and on deep issues and on life and death and very matter-of-fact about it. That said, one of the things that I grappled with over the course of our last 2 years is when you're with someone who's dying, and she had pancreatic cancer stage 4, so there's just no doubt about it. That is, except in the rarest of cases, a death sentence. There's a sort of question, which is, when are you living the dying, and when are you just simply living? And at one point in Mom's illness, she said to me about a great friend of ours, she said, I love her dearly. And I'm so grateful that she comes to see me. But if she's going to cry all the time, she can't come over anymore. That I need to live the end of my life. Yes. I cannot spend what months I have left mourning.
Right. Yes. Well, I have not read Crossing to Safety. And I would imagine because of the popularity of your book, it might be even hard to get these days. Is it, Will?
Nothing would make me happier. Actually, one of the things that I'm so thrilled about is booksellers have reported to me that people are, having read my book, coming back into the store and buying Crossing to Safety. And if my book does nothing else than get people to read Crossing to Safety by Wallace Stegner, then my work is done.
Okay, Will, it's on my list. I'm on vacation next
book.
Week. There we go.
All right.
Off to a bookstore. Yeah. Another book that was important to your mom, and I must say that I'm not aware of this book, but I think she, if I'm correct, my memory serves me well, found this to be very important to her, and you found it to be important to you in talking to her about illness. Etiquette of Illness, is that the name?
Yes, Etiquette of Illness by Sue Halperin is the name of the author. And this was a book that actually Mom's doctor suggested that she read, and she suggested that Mom give to all of us to read. And it taught me right on page 1, one of the most valuable things I learned, which is it taught me not to ask Mom, how are you feeling? But to ask Mom, do you want to talk about how you're feeling? Because it pointed out that when someone has any kind of serious illness, how are you feeling, even from a son or a spouse, is a kind of an intrusive question. And there are days when the person who isn't well really doesn't want to talk about how they're feeling. Maybe they've talked about it too much that day, or maybe they're just feeling sad and don't want to dwell on it, or maybe there's something else they want to talk about. So if you say to someone, do you want to talk about how you're feeling, they can say, yes, I would, or nope, not today.
Right. And how did you handle those occasions? And frequently they would have been days like Thanksgiving, one of your favorite holidays, other times for family gatherings. And there were occasions when your mother just was not well enough to be there. She couldn't be there.
Those are very hard. The occasions, the first Thanksgiving that she wasn't able to come to because she was just too sick. It was mm-hmm. very early after her diagnosis, and it was very important to her that my partner David and I and my father and friends, that we celebrate it together. And the way I describe it is almost like a rehearsal for the first Thanksgiving when she'd no longer be alive. And you know, we tried hard to have a good time, and everyone ate, and everybody drank, and everybody laughed, but it was very painful. But in some ways, I think my mother was preparing us for that. It's almost as though she was helping us rehearse the Thanksgiving when she wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm. There were so many books that you read together. Who took the lead here, or was it reciprocal?
Mm-hmm. It was one book led to another, and Mom would say she was reading something marvelous, and I had to read it. My mother was incredibly thrifty. So if anyone gave her a book, any book, she would read that book. And then she would pass it on. So a lot of the books were books people had left for her. And then there were some books that just everybody was talking about. So The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo by Stieg Larsson, everybody was talking about it, so Mom and I thought, we both sort of at the same time said, we have to read this book. Everyone's talking about it.
That struck me as an unusual choice for your mom. I haven't read that book because I'm not sure I would want to read that book. But isn't it interesting that she read the book that really was hip? It was popular. It was 2000 what? You know, it was a. And there is some disturbing material in that book.
There is, but Mom really took to it amazingly. She just loved it. And one of the things, she always saw things through various lenses. And because of her work with women and children refugees,
yes,
and with having witnessed and heard stories of gender-based violence in refugee camps around the world and cities around the world and rural places, she saw that book as a really stirring testament to evoke anger against gender-based violence, and actually thought that the book did really truly a world of good.
Your mother visited Afghanistan numerous times, didn't she?
She did indeed. She loved Pakistan and Afghanistan and going to the tribal regions there. There was a story she would tell about the first time she drove into Afghanistan over the Khyber Pass, and as they were heading towards Kabul, their convoy, gunfire erupted, and the convoy was shot at. And I said to Mom, you know, Mom, were you scared when they were shooting at you? And her answer was, oh, don't be silly. They weren't shooting at me, only at the tires. But she loved that part of the world, and she wanted to do one last really big thing before she died, and that was help an extraordinary woman named Nancy Hatch Dupree build a National Library Research Center in Kabul.
Oh, what a wonderful thing to do.
Yes, and I'm delighted to say she remarkably was able to raise enough money to do it, so the library opens in about a month.
Oh, will you be there? Are you going to go, or is it too dangerous?
It's not so much that it's too dangerous. It's just that we'd rather devote the resources necessary and the money necessary to getting one of us there to contributing that to the library.
Right. So obviously you read, and I know you did because you write about it, you read A Thousand Splendid Sons, the sequel to the Kite Runner. What did both of you think of both of those books?
Well, sorry, The Kite Runner is a book that Mom just flipped for. She felt it was the first book she could really give to people help them understand the Afghan people that she loved and see them as people, not as a problem, but as this wonderful nation of people. I liked that book. I didn't love it quite so much. I thought it piled on things a bit too thick. I mean, at one point I said to my mother, the really bad guy, I know he's Taliban, but does he have to be a Nazi too? couldn't he just be Taliban?
Right.
But that said, we both absolutely loved A Thousand Splendid Sons, which focuses much more on the women of Afghanistan. And that book spoke to Mom very profoundly. And she felt one of the big points Mom wanted to make about books is that if you read a book and it moves you, you have a responsibility to do something. And she felt that at the end of Kite Runner or A Thousand Splendid Suns, if those books in any way moved you, you needed to say, what am I going to do about Afghanistan? What can I do to help these people?
We welcome phone calls for Will. If you'd like to join our conversation, Will Schwalbe is the author of The End of Your Life Book Club, which has become a bestseller in this country. Will has worked in the publishing field for some 21 years. He has worked as a journalist, writing for the New York Times, South China Morning Post. He's on the boards of Yale University Press and other foundations, and he is also the co-author of Send, Why People Email So Badly and How to Do It Better. Oh, his mother did a blog, too. We need to talk about that. The End of Your Life Book Club. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join our conversation. I hope some of you who've read the book, it's been out for a little while, so some of you have read it. Many more will, I'm sure, if you're listening to Will talk. You'll be inspired to get that and Crossing to Safety by Wallace Stegner. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Leave messages for us on our Facebook page as well, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Or you can send one of those tweets, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The End of Your Life Book Club is what we're talking about this hour. Will Schwalbe is our guest, the author of the book, and you are welcome to join our conversation. I'm sure that many of you have had times in your lives when you've been in a small book club, maybe mother, son, maybe grandparent, child, maybe real book club, where the conversation, the books that you've chosen have led to important conversations that may make us uneasy to just talk about if we don't have a book as a reference. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. You're all readers. What do you think? 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. It's I think true of many people that you learn a great deal about your parents' childhoods at times when they are sick and certainly at times when they are dying. This was the case with your mother, whose name we should say is Mary Ann, except that you found out their name was really Mary during the course of your conversations. But you learned a lot about her life, her parents' unhappy marriage, her friends who were extraordinary people. I love that part of the book, Will.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Kathleen. Yeah, it was a kind of moment of quiet to sit there, especially during chemo when we'd have, you know, anywhere from 3 to sometimes 7 hours to just be with each other and talk. And once again, it was books that helped us get into those conversations. I'd never really asked my mother much about her favorite books, and the first one she mentioned was Gone with the Wind. But then the second book she mentioned was Marjorie Morningstar.
Yes, and that title has floated around in my life for years. I have never read it, but I will read that one as well. Tell me about it.
Well, it's actually a book that I then only read after Mom died, but I knew a little bit about it, and I found out a bit more about it, and I had her tell me about why she thought it was so important, by Herman Wouk, who wrote, of course, Winds of War and Caine Mutiny, and who, by the way, has a new book coming out this fall. I think he's at least 90, if not well into his 90s.
Wow.
But this book, Marjorie Morningstar, I found for so many women of my mother's generation, and my mother was 75 when she died in 2009. For so many women of her generation, this was the key book, about a young Jewish woman who changes her name from Marjorie Morgenstern to Morningstar, and who wants to be an actress, and who goes to a very louche summer stock theater and gets involved with this man, and it's just an extraordinary book. I absolutely loved it, but that idea of the push and pull of convention, and about my mother's generation, one of the first generations of women who could work by choice, not just by necessity, and the pull of family versus fame and job and career, it's just such a rich book.
Mm-hmm. Did you learn a whole lot about your mother's life through the books that you read that prompted these conversations when she was dying? Did you learn about a lot about her that you never knew?
I learned a lot, but I also learned, and it was a lesson that, Mom, I think, really wanted to teach me, which is that there are some things that you can never know, nor should you. Mom was a big believer in privacy. Mm-hmm. Mom felt that, as long as you weren't a hypocrite, that you should be allowed to have secrets, and that everyone should have secrets, and everyone should have things in their lives that are special to them. And so based on Marjorie Morningstar, I started kind of interrogating my mother about her years in summer stock theater, because she had been an actress and worked in summer stock. And I know she loved those years. But interestingly, she wouldn't tell me a single thing about it. Those were her years, her experiences, and she wasn't going to share them.
Oh, they may have been kind of wild, do you think, Will?
They may well have been kind of wild.
I think so. She also had, was it one of her best friends who was a famous actress who appeared on Broadway in, what was it? Was it Death of a Salesman?
Many things on Broadway. Oh, that was her drama teacher.
Oh, her teacher, right.
She was an extraordinary woman named Mildred Dunnock, who was the first it's Linda Loman, right?
Yes.
In Death of a Salesman. And so Mom got to go to the very first performance of Death of a Salesman on Broadway, and she described it as the single greatest night of theater of her life. Mm. But Millie was this extraordinary woman who was the drama teacher at the girls' high school that Mom was at and appeared on Broadway simultaneously and was up for several Academy Awards for things like Big Mama and Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. So the movie as well as the Tony for the play. So it's wild to imagine now what Tony Award-winning, Academy Award-winning actress would by day teach high school girl drama.
Yeah, your mom had a really wonderful life. I mean, she really did have
She really did.
Yeah. So at some point, you decided to ask her if it was okay, because you got the idea, and I wonder when you got the idea that maybe this would be good fodder for a book, all that you've been through for a couple of years, all the books that you've read together. She was not, even though she was a private person and thought things ought to be private, she was entirely amenable to your writing about this, wasn't she?
Well, it was a funny process. So I'd gone over, when Mom was really getting, it was clear we were getting to the end, and it was a couple months before Mom died, and she was officially on home hospice, so everything was palliative. There were no more attempts to try to cure back the disease. And I went over, and I had this concept that I should sort of give a big speech, that I should tell her how much I loved her, and I just couldn't. Mm. I just couldn't. It just didn't seem the time. But I blurted out something that I hadn't intended to say, which is, instead of saying, "I love you," I said, "I'm proud of you."
Mm.
And as soon as that came out of my mouth, another thought popped in, and I wound up saying to Mom, "You know, I want to write a book about you, about the books we've read, about the conversations we've had, and about all that we've learned from books and from each other." And her first reaction was instant. It was, "Oh, sweetie, don't be silly. Why on earth would you want to do that? There's so many other interesting things to write about." But the very next day, I got an email from Mom, and it was a list of every book we had read in order. And then a couple days after that, I got another email. "Don't forget to talk about the need for healthcare reform."
Bless her.
And then after that, a series of emails as to what to include in the book. And we never talked about it again, but I got these emails of what to include.
Oh. She also did a blog. You recommended that, didn't you, early on, so that she could tell people about what she was experiencing, what her life was?
Exactly. Right from the start, and I'd heard this from many other people, that it would be very helpful if Mom kept a blog so that her friends would know how she was doing without having to bother her, and
right,
so that she could sometimes say, you know, this is not a good week for phone calls, or so people wouldn't worry, too, if they hadn't heard from her, but so her phone wouldn't ring off the hook. And she thought it was a good idea, as did Dad, but she said, "Oh, no, I'm not a writer. I couldn't possibly write it. You write it well." But then what she started doing right from the first one is, she would write them as though I had written them about her. So she would send me something to post, and it would say, today I visited mom and she says, and so it was very funny. I almost referred to it as ghost written because in theory I was keeping the blog about mom, but in reality she was writing each one of the entries as though I had written it.
Oh.
And sooner or later, what happened is her political views started to creep in, too. She was a passionate Obama supporter. And so as the election drew near, there were many entries urging people to support Obama.
She must have been tremendously excited by that election.
I think excited doesn't even begin to describe it. There were certain events, and there's that wonderful Joan Didion phrase, magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain things that just had to happen for her to feel okay about leaving the world. And one of those things was the election of Barack Obama. And another thing was she had a dear young friend who was a New York Times reporter who was working with her on raising money for the library in Kabul, who was seized by the Taliban. And that was David Rode.
Mm-hmm.
And through much of mom's illness, David was held in captivity incommunicado by the Taliban. And I think mom really felt if she was going to exit the world and feel like she'd left the world in reasonable shape, David Rode somehow had to make it back to safety. And one of the miracles I talk about in this book is he indeed did. He escaped. Mm. And they were able to see each other before she died.
Mm. Do you think a lot of us are like that? I mean, we're not dying, we don't think. But do you think that we need to feel better about certain things before we leave the world, many of us?
I think we do. I've heard from a lot of people, and a lot of people have told me that it's almost, and this is a slightly trivial analogy, but I'll use it anyways, it's almost like the need to clean your house a little before you go on a trip. That it can be okay if it's a mess day after day, but if you're
right.
going to leave,
right.
you want it to be a little straightened up.
Right.
And I think to be able to leave life hopeful about what kinds of outcomes there'll be for people you love, for your children, for your grandchildren, I think it is important. I think a lot of people feel there's certain things that they don't need to have happen, but would deeply want to have happen. And there is some of that Joan Didion magical thinking associated with it.
Right. David Halberstam, a good friend of yours, I think you worked on publishing one of his books. You and your mom read The Coldest Winter about the Korean War, and you write that fate and the effects of choices people make was something that you and your mom talked about a lot. Prompted by that particular book? Prompted by David Halberstam?
Prompted by that book. Also prompted by a book, Appointment in Samara.
Mm.
By John O'Hara, and the idea of, you know, when certain things are set in motion, can they be changed? Can they be reversed? And I think it's a very powerful, painful, and natural subject in the context of severe or terminal illness, because you can't help but say, I wonder if we'd gone to this doctor earlier, or what if we tried that treatment, or what caused this thing anyways? Where does pancreatic cancer come from? Was it a chemical I was exposed to? I mean, you in any of these situations, you start thinking about everything you could or could do differently. And yet at some point, you also start thinking about fate. And would any of it have made any difference? And that's one of the great things I think literature gives us. And we found that theme again and again. We found it in Halberstam. It's a big theme of Khaled Hosseini. It's a big theme of A Thousand Splendid Sons. And it is, of course, the entire theme of John O'Hara's An Appointment in Samara.
Mm-hmm. What about the inspirational? We've already talked about the illness book. I'm interested in this other book, which was really important for your mom, and I hadn't heard of before, Daily Strength for Daily Needs. Well, what is that book?
That's a little Christian devotional. Every day has its own page.
Mm.
At the start of every page is a quote from the Bible. Then comes a usually religious meditation by a philosopher or thinker. And then there's often a little bit of poetry. It's a very religious Christian book that mom took enormous comfort in. And she had it by her side throughout the entire end of her illness. She read every day's passage. And sometimes if she thought the passage was something that I could benefit from, she would just simply leave it out for me with a bookmark in it, and then have an excuse to leave the room with the knowledge that I would indeed read that day's entry.
And was that a book that somebody important sent to her?
She had a very dear friend from college who she'd reconnected with. They'd been out of touch for literally decades, and he was the one who sent it to her. And she wound up recommending it to dozens of people, too. It's a book that has been around for, I can't remember if it's 100 years, but one of the wonderful things was her copy of the book was printed the year she was born.
Oh.
It had clearly had several different owners, one of whom had made some remarkable underlinings in the book. And I think Mom got great comfort from that physical book, from knowing that that very volume had provided comfort to several, if not even more, people before, from the year of her birth to the present.
Mm. Did it for you as well? Did you find anything along those lines that was comforting to you, Will?
One of the books that I came back to that really helped me in a great time of need was actually The Hobbit. The Hobbit had been one of my favorite childhood books. My mother and siblings used to joke that I became so Hobbit-like that I was writing everything in those runes. And at one point, even I think when I was 9, I wanted a clay pipe, and they said absolutely not. But I love the way sometimes physical books just appear when you need them. And there was one night when I was very upset and very emotional, and The Hobbit basically fell off a shelf right in front of me, and I turned to a passage about how our Hobbit hero, Bilbo, is lost in the dark woods, and he's crying out for his companions, and he can't find them, but he hears them crying for him. And for some reason, that was just the passage I needed to read at that moment, because it ends by saying he finally went to sleep because he knew tomorrow the light would come. And it's a very powerful message.
Yes, it is. Have you seen the movie?
Not yet. I can't wait. I think that one of the great things about books and movies and all of this is sometimes just accidentally the wisdom that you need just finds its way to you.
That's true. We welcome phone calls. If you don't want to call us, that's fine. I'm having a rip-roaring good time myself. But I'm sure there are a few of you who have read Will's book. Many more will be prompted to do so. Or you've been through perhaps a similar experience with a dear friend or with a member of your family where perhaps you spent time, even before sickness, reading books and sharing books and being able to open up about topics that may be difficult to talk about, but through the luxury and the wonder of marvelous writing and important books, you were able to do just that. The End of Your Life Book Club is Will's book. It is a bestseller, and it's just a lovely book. Will has worked in the book publishing field for 21 years, and this particular book is about his mom and Will and the books that they read after she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. His mother's name, Mary Ann. And it's they were both avid readers and for all of their lives, and so it was no different except perhaps what they read and what they thought was important. And the conversations that ensued as a result of having read certain books is what the End of Your Life Book Club is all about. So I'll give you our phone number again, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Or you can always leave a message for us on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Will Schwalbe is our guest. The End of Your Life Book Club is what we're talking about, and we will go to phone calls now, starting with Jeff in Spring Grove, Illinois. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Just a couple quick comments. I did read the author's book, and I really did enjoy it. It's just a very nice, very moving book. And I was also very impressed by how much his mother had actually accomplished in her lifetime.
I'm with you on that, Jeff. Your mother did so much in her lifetime, Will.
She did do a lot, but boy, did she ever love it. I mean, she did it because she was never happier than when she was doing something.
Mm-hmm. Are there books, Jeff, that you've been inspired to read as a result of reading Will's book? Oh, he's gone. Okay, well, thanks, Jeff. And tweet that's come in, crossing to safety is one of my tops, too. I was so happy to see Will's book start off with this title.
Yes, it is an amazing book, and so many people have sort of vaguely heard of it, and yet haven't read it. And I just, it's so fun. I get so many emails from people who've read my book and they're so excited to talk about Crossing to Safety.
Yeah, it's one of those books that you think you've heard about it so much. People will ask, have you read Crossing to Safety? Oh, yeah, I read that. And
then
you
exactly.
Think, wait a second, did I? What was that about again?
Oh,
yeah. What was that about? You also have siblings in your family. Did any of them read any of the books, too, or was this something that was really something your mom and you did?
They read a lot of the books, too, they had discussions with mom about the books, but the sort of piece of information that's important to know is both of my siblings have children, and my partner and I don't. And my mom's favorite topic in the whole wide world, bar none, was her grandchildren. So especially in the last years of her life, when she was on the phone with my sister and my brother, their partners, it was grandchildren 24/7.
I'm sure it was. And there's such a tender story in the book. The one night your mom read to you and your brother, I believe, every night, which is such a lovely thing to do for your children. And there was one night... Well, you fill in the story.
Yes, well, she had company over, and she just forgot. And so there I was in bed. I had my book. I was waiting for her to read to me. And I went from unconsolable to hysterical. And I was screaming so loudly that eventually one of the guests, mom and dad were entertaining, said, I think you're something's wrong with your child. And of course she came up and was finally able to calm me down and read me a book. And while we were sitting in chemo, I brought this up not because I was scarred by it, but just because it's a story from my childhood. And I said, do you remember the night that happened? And she said to me, how could I forget? But I don't know if she meant how could I forget to read to you or how could I ever forget that story. And I think maybe she meant both.
Right. I think she did, too. Carol in Randolph. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. I'm trying to write down the titles of several of these books that he's talking about, and you're going too fast for me. What was the title of that daily devotional, please?
It's called Daily Strength for Daily Needs.
Thank you.
All right.
And I should also add, too, that at the urging of a friend of my mother's, the book has a list in the back of every book that we mention or discuss. And the list is also available on our the book's Facebook page, a list of every book mentioned and discussed.
Well, that's a good thing to do. And so you just go to Google the End of Your Life Book Club.
Book Club Facebook, and then there's a list of all the books.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Carol, for the call. Our number, 800-486-8655. Heloise in Milwaukee. Hi, Heloise.
Hi. I have read the book, and I was just wondering if the author knew that one of your mother's friends that you describe in the book, Judy Mayotte, she lived here in Milwaukee for several years. She was a professor at Marquette University.
Oh.
And many of us knew her at the time that she lived here. And I when I noticed that in the book, I thought, oh, I know somebody that your mother knew. And I just wanted to comment on this.
Oh, that's so great. The context was I was asking my mother who she thought was really brave, who her mm-hmm. heroes were. And Judy Mayotte was one of the people she said was one of the bravest people she knew and was a genuine hero.
Right.
Yeah, remarkable humanitarian woman with an extraordinary life journey. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Heloise, so much for calling. Here's an email coming in. Dying to Be Me by Anita Morjani is an excellent read for anyone, especially someone who's facing a terminal illness.
Oh, I haven't heard of that. That's a wonderful suggestion. I will write that down and look that up as soon as I get back. It's great. I love to get book suggestions like that. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
What about the books that you're reading now, Will? The time that you spent with your mom, is it in some way informing what you read after her death?
In some ways it is. And I also just have that that thing still where I'll be reading a book and I'll think, oh, Mom would have loved this, or I'd love to talk to Mom about this. But I read so widely many of the books are books I would have read with Mom, but some of them are ones that because I'm pretty sure she wouldn't have liked very much. Mom had this thing about what she called silly books. She didn't have patience for silly books, and I think I have more patience for silly books than she does.
It's okay, because you read a lot of books that aren't silly, too, right?
I do. And there's some wonderful books out this year. I mean, this is just a great year for books. There's so much to read, it's almost crazy.
It's like watching Dancing with the Stars for a couple episodes. If you're reading great books, watching great documentaries, a couple Dancing with the Stars isn't going to hurt you, right?
Absolutely. No, and at one point in the book, I talk about how, I mean, I'm a massive reality television show watcher. I've seen every episode of The Real World since inception.
No. Will.
And Mom really didn't want to hear about it. She didn't disapprove. She just didn't want to hear about it. She didn't think that was an interesting conversation.
Oh, we all have our little foibles. You you read Somerset Maugham. What did you read by Somerset Maugham? And I think both of you really liked Somerset Maugham.
We did. Well, Somerset Maugham's stories, we both thought that he's was the greatest short story writer in the English language. Mm. But the book that we talked about the most in the last 2 years of her life, of Mom's books, was The Painted Veil. And The Painted Veil is an extraordinary novel. It was also made into a movie about a man, a doctor, whose wife is unfaithful in Hong Kong, and he takes her to a part of China where there's a cholera epidemic, sort of in the back of her mind with the kind of hope that the cholera will kill her and kill the both of them. And she discovers there a kind of courage and purpose that she never knew she had. And it's a really a beautiful meditation on courage and a very inspiring book.
Mm-hmm. You both liked, and you include some of the opening lines of books, that an opening line can grab you and get you reading.
We loved opening lines. It was almost like a little game to sort of recall our favorites. One of our favorites was The Small Boys Came Early to the Hanging. And that's the opening of Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth. Hmm. And I mean, really, how can you not go on reading if you've heard The Small Boys Came Early to the Hanging? What small boys? What hanging? What's right. going on? And Prayer for Owen Meany, E.M. Forster. It's kind of a fun game to just, if you're feeling, it's much more than procrastinating, because it brings back so many memories. It's just to pull books sequentially off your bookshelf and read opening line after opening line after opening line.
Would you say, I think you say this in the book, that that your mom maybe even had a preference for books that had perhaps a darker theme, that she was comfortable with reading all of that?
Very, very much. At one point, there's right before her birthday, the second to last birthday before she died, I gave her a book by Russell Banks to read called Continental Drift. And it's a savagely depressing book. And I really worried that I'd gone overboard and that I had done something really terrible and given somebody who has this terrible terminal illness something too depressing. But in fact, she absolutely loved it. And we talked about this, and she really felt that you needed to see the world in all its complexity, in good and bad, and that unless you were willing to sort of stare into the darkness, you couldn't appreciate everything wonderful around you, and that we have the responsibility as human beings to see the worst. We need to see the worst things that are out there. Mm. I love depressing books, but I have just much more mundane, less noble reason, which is I just always feel better about my own life after I read something depressing. Mm-hmm. It's just nothing ever seems that bad after I've read something really, really depressing.
Will, what did you read after she died?
I started reading, one of the things that it did is we read a lot of the books that we had read and loved. Mm. But I then moved on to the widest variety of things. And, for example, a book I just finished, there's a Canadian writer named Vincent Lam. His book, The Headmaster's Wager, wonderful novel. And I just couldn't help thinking, this is a book my mother would have loved. Mm-hmm. A writer that I did read right after she died is actually a religious writer, Paul Tillich. And I read his book, The Dynamics of Faith. And I found, even though I am still not particularly religious, I found that a very meaningful book.
Let's go to Valerie in Boaz. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Will. I normally don't call because I get so nervous, but I am the one who emailed about Dying to Be Me, and it's just such a fantastic book. I wanted to say something else about it since you're not familiar with it. Anita Morjani was diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and she was actually, she had a near-death experience, and she was in a coma for about 30 hours, and she experienced the afterlife, and her description of it really resonates with me. I'm not particularly religious, but she experienced nothing but love and non-judgment and non-punishment, and she came out of this realizing that it was kind of a win-win situation. Whether she lived or died, either outcome was totally fine by her. She couldn't understand why anyone else was worried about her dying. And I just think anyone could benefit from reading this book.
Oh, it sounds like a wonderful book. Thank you for letting me know about that. I'm very eager to read that. Thank you.
I'm just looking now. I just didn't look at this appendix in the book. I don't know why, Will, but I can't believe how many books you read. This list goes on and on and on.
Well, those are actually books that we either mentioned or referenced from throughout our lives. The number of books we read was just over 50, but it was over 2 years, so that's about a book every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Reynolds.
So it's not as many as it might at first look reading the appendix,
okay,
which looks a little daunting.
It does look daunting, but it's a great list of books. It really is just a wonderful list of books, isn't it?
One of the things that are so great about books is they're with you your whole life. And that I always say to people that, you know, when I finished David Copperfield, that wasn't the last time I thought about David Copperfield. I think about him all the time. And to me, that's also a very powerful metaphor for people you love who've died, that their death isn't the end of your relationship with them. It continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You think about all of those books all the time, huh?
Yes, I talk to David Copperfield. Sometimes I talk to Little Emily. I even talk to Steerforth from time to time. And it's every character in every book I've loved is with me forever. And everybody I've known in life and have loved is also with me forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things I really wanted to do is a lot of people have lost people they love, and they want to talk about them. Not everybody, but a lot of people want to talk about people they love who have died.
Yes.
And it doesn't always make other people comfortable. And sometimes other people change the topic because they think, oh, you'll get sad. And I've spoken to so many people who say, no, I get sad when I don't talk about these people. So in many ways, I hope that the books can encourage people to revisit their memories of what they read or saw or talked about with the people they loved, not just in the last years, but throughout their entire lives.
Right. Well, it's a good thing to do. There are people who are worth talking about, for heaven's sake, and to keep their lives alive for other human beings. They're inspirational. They're important people. Of course,
yes,
you want to talk about them.
Exactly. And then also when you can say to someone, well, you didn't know my mother or this person, but here's a book my mother loved.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read this book that my mother loved, you'll get a little bit of who my mother was. And so by reading the books that the people we loved is another way to kind of experience that person.
It is indeed. Well, I'm so glad you did this and that it was okay with your mom, because it's just a lovely book, and you must feel so gratified and wish you could tell her, Mom, it's on the bestseller list. Mom!
I would have loved to tell her that. She would have gotten a kick out of that. I do think that's right.
Oh, I imagine she would have had a big kick out of that. Are you working on something else now, Will?
I am indeed. I'm working on something else. It's totally different. I'm really enjoying working on it, and I'm still spending just wonderful time. I'm doing a lot of talking with people and a lot of listening to people and hearing their stories about people they loved and about books they read, and that's incredibly gratifying.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for being with us. Best of holidays to you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Best of holidays to you and all your listeners.
Will Schwalbe, you spell his name S-C-H-W-A-L-B-E, and the book is The End of Your Life Book Club, with all kinds of book suggestions, too. at the end and during the course of the book, where he and his mom, Marianne, after she was diagnosed with cancer, but well before that, but seriously when she was diagnosed, read so many books together and then talked about, had some of those conversations prompted by what they read that may have been difficult to have if they hadn't read the books. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program. I'm going to be on vacation next week, so I'll be with you again on New Year's Eve, but we're running some of the best of 2012, so stay with us. Some of those conversations we are happy to repeat.